It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Kevin Gavin, sitting in today for Paul Guggenheimer. According to a recent study by Georgetown University, in 2020, the United States will face a shortage of about 5 million workers with the necessary skills to fill available jobs. That's when current sixth graders are getting their high school diplomas. The study indicates that many of those jobs will be in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM, and the majority of those jobs will require higher education. That means catalyzing a greater interest in STEM among today's middle schoolers and having the teachers in place to spark and nurture that interest. Westminster College announced yesterday that it had received a more than $1 million grant from the National Science Foundation to help increase the qualifications of secondary school educators in science, technology, engineering, and math. Joining us now on Essential Pittsburgh is Professor Amy Kamerdice, Chair of the Department of Education at Westminster. Professor Kamerdice, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, it's nice to be on the show, Kevin. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you. So, if you have questions for our guest about enhancing the skills of STEM teachers, you can call 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. When the grant was announced, Westminster's president, Richard Dorman, said, quote, "Through this exceptional program, Westminster will significantly contribute to strengthening STEM skills and qualifications within the region's high-need secondary schools," end quote. Amy Kamerdice, let's talk about some of the key points in that statement. Inequities in our public school system have been well documented. Is the range of qualifications of STEM teachers one of those inequities?
Yes, it is. If you take a look at the data concerning the STEM teachers in areas of high need and school districts of high need, you're going to find that they are there's a marked deficit in comparison to school districts that are not considered high need. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, this is data from 2011, we have 82% of the teachers that have 5 years of experience teaching their subject. Those are 82% of white teachers, but in 66% of black teachers and 67% of Hispanic teachers and 70% of low-income teachers. So there's a disparity in those numbers. And what we're hoping to do with our Robert Noyce grant is kind of lessen that achievement gap and improve the STEM teaching in areas of high need. We've selected four different school districts within our area that had data that had lower test scores. And we feel by working with those schools, we can strengthen their programs, provide professional development by having our faculty, STEM faculty, work with them, and also by placing the Noyce scholars in their classrooms for practicums.
Okay. Now, is part of the problem a high turnover rate so that at high-need district has maybe high turnover of STEM teachers, and they're really just getting into it, starting to really refine their teaching abilities, their teaching skills, and then they're off to another district? Does that play a role?
I think that's too often correct, unfortunately. And one of the things that we are doing with this grant, I think, will address that particular topic. I think oftentimes teachers in the STEM areas in particular do not receive coursework in working with students. It's a different type of teaching that you need to do, I think, when you're working with students of high need. And so we've developed a course for our Noyce scholars that will help them understand the needs in an area of high need and also specific strategies that might work with those students.
What about the support that the teachers in the high need districts get? Are they getting enough, whether it's moral support, physical support in terms of technology, materials, etc., so that they have those sort of fun, engaging tools they need to maybe spark that student interest and keep it, and not only spark the interest, but relating that to the corresponding achievement by the students?
I do think that teachers feel that they are lacking some support. They feel, let's see, in Pennsylvania, I think they're about, I have some figures here. I think there's about 59% of the teachers that feel that they need additional support in the areas of that includes having all the materials and tools that they have that they need for teaching. And that's, I'm going to put in a plug for our grant. There's another aspect of the grant that I think will provide that support. We have mentors from our STEM faculty at Westminster that are going to be working with the teachers in the four area high schools, and they're also going to be mentoring the NOI scholars, so that in addition to having a course and working with students in high area needs, we are going to have faculty that work with these students and help them in these specific schools too. And so I call that a circle of influence. So we're working with the high schools and preparing them for college work, and then at the same time hoping to influence some of the students that are attending those high schools, and perhaps they'll think about it going to Westminster.
I'm going to get in a little deeper to some of the particulars of Westminster's plan in just a minute, but I want to kick it up one level. What role, if any, does the varying quality of the instruction, the training of the teachers to be, receive at schools and departments of education at differing universities play in any disparity in skills of our STEM teachers?
Well, again, if you so what you're talking about basically is whether or not teachers have enough coursework in their undergraduate major.
Yes.
And so in Pennsylvania, we actually, when you compare Pennsylvania to the U.S., we are doing a little bit better job, but it's still an area of concern. So, for example, when teachers who have an undergraduate major in the subject that they teach, in Pennsylvania, it's 38% compared to 32% in the U.S. And that's for math. For science, it's 59% in Pennsylvania and 49% in the U.S. So that needs some work. We need to improve those percentages.
So what would you like to see it be? Do you have a goal in mind?
Well, our immediate goal is, you know, we feel that we can make an impact in a way by growing very competent STEM teachers that are prepared to stay in their field teaching. I think that teaching is the finest avocation anyone could have, and that has the most impact on a person's life. And so by doing that training, that's our job. We have to do a very good job of preparing students to go into classrooms and teach and equip them with the necessary tools. And so if they are equipped with those tools, they're going to do a better job teaching and then stay in that field and have a larger impact on students as far as the STEM areas go.
As we get into the particulars of Westminster's plan, one of those tools, I think, might be a teacher's awareness and understanding of the community in which he or she teaches. And part of your plan has to do with a course to address the racial, cultural, and economic needs of the district in a manner to help reduce that achievement gap, is it not?
Correct. And so what we aim to do in that particular course is have students understand the historical context of poverty, and then also look at the perspective of cultural minority, and then engage by having practicums in those classrooms. And they are also going to do some research. Now, the research that they do is going to be related to their area of STEM, but the course will incorporate all of those objectives.
You're not just doing research and developing plans in a bubble, shall we say. You alluded to school district collaborators, the four school districts earlier, and that would be Sharon School District, Farrell Area, Union Area, and Newcastle Area. So tell us about developing that formal collaboration with those districts.
So in writing the grant, we contacted those four school districts because in looking at the data, they were underperforming schools. They also often are schools that have a high incidence of free and reduced lunches among their students, and a healthy amount of minority student population. And so we felt that, you know, they are our neighbors, and we also feel an obligation to use the tools that we have at the college to enhance the welfare of our neighboring school districts. And we felt the best way to do this in providing these scholarships was to work with those school districts, provide some professional development for their teachers. So every summer they will be attending a workshop that will provide current research-based strategies in their particular STEM area. They also will be in contact with our senior personnel. We've identified senior personnel in our district or in our college. We have, for example, Sarah Rose Lynch and Pam Richardson, who are in the math department, Karen Resendez, who's in biology. Karen is also the co-principal investigator. Sarah Kennedy is in the chemistry department, and Tom Oberst is in physics. And so those folks will not only mentor the students, but they will work with the faculty at the various school districts, and we will also have the teachers' workshop. So in that way, it's not just a one-shot deal, but it's an ongoing, integrated, pervasive five-year plan. And by the end of those 5 years, we expect to see some improvement in the district scores.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about those goals, but what I want to ask you is just, how interactive is this collaboration going to be? It can't be sort of a one-way street from Westminster to these four school districts, can it?
No. We have a steering committee that includes not only the senior personnel and Karen Resendez, the co-principal investigator, and I, and outside of our college, individuals who will help us direct and make sure that we're meeting our objectives.
How do you make sure that the strategies that you develop are applicable to any high-need district and not tailored so finely to the specifics of your four partners that they can be used elsewhere as well?
Well, we have an outside evaluator. Dr. Rich Milner is from the University of Pittsburgh, and he is working with us on the assessment plan. So we are carefully taking data and working throughout the year. You know, this is all getting started right now, but we will be taking data so that we can measure our progress. So if we find an area that is not, you know, doing what we would like to do, we'll be able to shift directions. And as far as the teaching strategies, that, you know, that's part of the assessment. If something is working, it should come out in the data. And if it is a positive outcome in these four school districts, I would like to be able to think that you can generally apply that to many other school districts as well.
All right. We've often heard about medical students getting help with tuition if they agree to practice medicine in underserved regions. Westminster's IQ STEM grant program has a bit of a twist on that, don't you, about scholarships for STEM majors?
Correct. For every year of support that the Noyce Scholar receives, they are going to be committed to teaching for 2 years in a school district of high need.
All right. So, what are the specific goals? You were alluding to them a little earlier. What are the specific goals of this program and the timetable that you would like to see to achieve those goals?
Well, we have 5 years. The grant is for 5 years. So what we plan to do by the end of the 5 years is increase by 20 the number of highly qualified STEM educators in areas of high need and high need school districts. We want to be able to assess our undergraduate course that we've developed for teaching in areas of high need, and we want to ensure that their content knowledge and pedagogy skills of the Noyce Scholars is going to be measurable as being beneficial.
Amy Kemmerdies, thanks so much. Good luck with this program.
Thank you for letting me talk about it. I appreciate that.
Professor Amy Camerdis is the chair of the Department of Education at Westminster College, talking about their program to increase qualified STEM educators in high-need school districts in western Pennsylvania. North Allegheny is not a high-need school district, but it is striving to make sure it has the best STEM teachers for the district's 8,000-plus students. Joining us now in Studio A to continue our conversation on a quality STEM learning experience is the chair of the science department at North Allegheny, Chris Omositz. Chris, welcome to Central Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, realizing that North Allegheny is the largest school district in the county outside city of Pittsburgh, about how many science, math, STEM teachers, if you will, does the district have?
Sure. If you add together the science and math departments as well as the technology education departments, you're well over 100 teachers, although it's tough to qualify because STEM is really such a far-reaching, broad, and hard-to-define thing right now in high school.
Is it meant to be that way? Is it that it's also interrelated?
I think it's that way because of really what it is. As STEM develops, we are, it's kind of cliched, but we're preparing kids for jobs that don't exist yet. And given that there's no definition for those jobs, it's a little bit hard to say what really is STEM other than it's an evolving trend towards science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education that needs to look a little bit different than it did 5-10 years ago.
So some of those jobs might not exist just yet, but do you have a grasp on the skill set that no matter what the jobs are, these will be basic skills that might be required?
Sure. What we're trying to do with STEM education is really teach students how to be new thinkers. We're creating inventors, we're creating innovators, and we're creating problem solvers, more so than just teaching content. And that's why it's really able to reach into any other of the curriculums, not just science, not just math, but it's far-reaching with the kids because we're teaching them how to think, not just how to memorize a list of words.
Yes, it is all about thinking now and problem-solving, isn't
exactly.
It? What do you look for in a good STEM teacher?
Well, obviously, we want the things that Professor Camerdis was talking about, a balance of content knowledge, instructional strategies, a passion for teaching, obviously. From there, though, we really want people that are willing to take risks, and that's part of what STEM is, because classroom teaching is no longer, here's a textbook, here's an answer key, good luck, we'll see you in June. But it's becoming people that have to be willing to step out there, take a chance, collaborate. And I'm so happy to hear the Westminster grant involves so much collaboration and mentoring because it needs to be people that are going to work in a community, that are going to work with not just their teachers, but reach out to businesses, partnerships, parents, and really be willing to change the way they teach, not necessarily what they teach because the content is still really the base of what we do in the classroom. But you need to be willing to bend a little bit and take some risks with your kids and go out there and put yourself out there to take a chance with a new type of project.
All right, Chris, how long have you been a teacher?
10 years at North Allegheny.
Okay, and what do you teach specifically?
I've taught a wide range of subjects, actually, from AP physics all the way down to low-level learner biology courses. So I'm really kind of all over the board right now, grades 9 through 12.
Well, you don't have to think back too far, but I'm going to ask you to think back to maybe your high school days, intermediate high school days. Think about that. In terms of when you were taking science and math classes, were they very innovative, and how have you tried to make them and have teachers in your department make them as innovative as possible at North Allegheny?
Sure. The trend when I was a student was really towards hands-on learning, and that was the buzzword at that point, and it was getting kids doing things, performing labs, performing hands-on activities. Like I said before, not just learning from a book, but it was really a lot of it was still teacher-based, and the teacher was kind of guiding the lab activity. You would be given a series of tasks, and you were asked to come to a conclusion, but it may not have been very open-ended. Whereas now the trend is really towards the student is sort of guiding the learning through a lab activity. And it can be frustrating at times for students because they look to a teacher for all the answers. And occasionally the teacher is more there as a guide than somebody who's going to feed them all the answers during one of those hands-on activities.
So frustrating for them. What about frustrating for some of the more veteran teachers who were used to that way of doing things?
Sure. Obviously, any change is always met with some resistance anywhere you are in a workplace. And I think people get comfortable with what they're doing, but we also hope to provide that support as a department and using the resources that we have in the school district, provide support for people to be willing to take those chances and also show them why it's a good thing. And I think once we start to see those successes, it becomes very easy to jump on board. And we're fortunate to have a large staff, a lot of people with different varied talents that are willing to take those chances. And then from there, we take the next natural progression to more people giving it a shot and more people jumping on board with it.
You used that phrase, taking chances, a couple times just there. Is that emphasized, like, early on when somebody's new to the district?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily emphasized, because the last thing you want is to cause a young new teacher to be outside of their comfort zone. But it's something that, as a veteran teacher, as you develop those skills and as you're 5 or 10 years into your career, you start to realize that you almost will stagnate if you're not willing to go out and change some things that you're doing. And while it's not necessarily taking a chance, you're putting yourself out there to fail, it's more, I've never tried this before. I'm not sure how it's going to go. And we have resources like technology integrators or even just supportive principals are all huge in a teacher being willing to go and do something that they don't know totally how it's going to work out the first time they do it.
You mentioned stagnation. All teachers have to be able to adapt to avoid that stagnation. They have to adapt their classroom approach. But is that even more important for STEM teachers with technology seemingly always evolving?
Most definitely, yeah. If you're not always looking at new activities, new labs and things, we're going to get left behind. And it's really important for not just in the science classroom, but technology education, mathematics, really to kind of be working together, always be looking out there, like I said earlier, reaching out to community partners, really seeing what's available. And even if it's not new equipment, as Professor Camerdy said, if the money is not there in a certain district, that doesn't mean they can't innovate and they can't still try new activities and reach out and find new partnerships and things.
When I asked you about how many teachers were STEM teachers in the North Allegheny School District, you said, well, in this department, and this department combined, I think you separated them to math and science and technology.
Correct.
Okay. Are those departments ever going to be just one big department? Do you see that evolving?
I can definitely see, even this year, we're going to end up with, when we have department time on in-service days and we get together, it's important, I think, for those departments to collaborate. And I think the boundaries are going to start to blur a little bit. And while there's, because of the way our standards and our curriculum is written, there's always probably going to be that separation there, the lines will definitely blur. And it's really important to STEM education, because you can't teach science in a vacuum and do the kids the justice that they deserve with that class. You have to be integrating the math and the technology education in and those other subjects exactly the same way with science. You really can't define, I'm just a technology education teacher, if you're teaching a child robotics, because it involves so many science and math concepts that are out there. And there's also a ton of other acronyms that involve even the arts classes being involved in this sort of STEM critical thinking creativity thing, because we have at North Allegheny, a huge arts program where creativity is what they are teaching. So it's hard to define exactly how many STEM teachers there are, but I'd be surprised if everybody at some point doesn't have their hand somewhere in something STEM related during this school year.
All right. On a personal note, have you changed your approach in your 10 years at North Allegheny?
Most definitely. I think, as I mentioned earlier, as a rookie teacher, you're really honing your skills, and you're in survival mode for a little bit, and you have days that are very difficult. And as you get more comfortable, those difficult days become fewer and fewer. And I think you get more comfortable to go out and try some new lessons and try some new things. And I've been very fortunate to have amazing colleagues at North Allegheny where if somebody hands me a lab that works really well for them, I'd be a fool not to take it and run with it the next year and make it my own in the classroom. And I think just evolving to that more hands-on, student-led learning is where we're headed. And as every teacher develops one new great lesson that worked this year, and you should try this next year. Now we have those 10 lessons from my 10 neighbors down the hall that come together, and we start to evolve as a department.
We mentioned earlier in the program about the projected large shortage of STEM workers come 2020. Anecdotally, how much interest do you perceive among your students, not just to do well in the particular course that you're teaching or your colleagues are teaching, but maybe explore one of the sciences or technology or engineering or math as a career, not just, okay, I want to get an A in this course, I want to get an A in this course, good, I've got that credit taken care of, but I might want to explore this as a career.
One of the most encouraging trends that I'm seeing is students who realize that just because you like science doesn't mean you have to be a scientist. It is huge in my mind. I mentioned robotics earlier just as an example, but something like engine repair. involves so much science and math and technology. And students that do that, maybe the students that aren't the ones that are looking towards med school or an engineering school. But those are the students that if they have a great science teacher, like, for example, that Westminster hopefully is going to start putting out using this grant money, if they have somebody that reached them, that made them realize, wow, I really love physics, maybe that student now has an idea towards a new career path, or even just they realize that they're a lot more technically minded than they may think they are, and that really comes from passionate educators that are prepared to reach all levels of students and not just the ones that are going to sign up for an AP class, whether you ask them to or not.
Chris Omisitz, thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Chris Omisitz is the chair of the science department at the North Allegheny School District. Coming up, part of the answer to filling some of those STEM jobs might be accepting more workers from other countries. Immigration reform and workforce needs. That's next on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.